Good morning, everyone. This is Jay Austin, the Bowtie King of Atlanta. I'd like to welcome everybody to our podcast today on bowtielife.net. We have a very interesting guest today that we're going to be interviewing later in the show. And the topic of our show is basically about homelessness from different aspects, all the way from a person actually being homeless, but the goal today is to give people a look at the infrastructure of homelessness as it relates to people who actually help and work behind the scenes. I have been involved with the homeless for quite some time as a board member at the Nicholas House, which is near and dear to me. But there was a lot that people would think when you stop and ask somebody, you know, what do they think homelessness, what is it to them? Most people, the vast majority of the people, have an image in their mind that it's some old guy underneath the bridge somewhere. And what this podcast is about is like really digging in to that image. And hopefully by the end of the show, we can shift that paradigm in your mind and just give you a look at some of the fundraising challenges that homeless shelters in the nonprofit space have to climb, or hills or challenges that they have. From a board member's perspective, some of the pivot points as to how fundraising is done with the public and private sector partnerships in order to get things done. The shift in just funding, where the government was a huge, they were just a huge part of grants, and this would help the cause, where, you know, since the crash in 2008, things have shifted. Some of these things I know because I served on the board of the Nicholas House for 4 years. But our guest today is attorney Joe Morris, and he is he's been a board member of Common. Let me get this right. I want to just make sure that I say it properly. It is Community Concerns Inc., which is a homeless outreach program that's been in Atlanta for 30 years now. So through it all, Community Concerns Inc. Is basically a holistic approach to end homelessness. Now, I know that sounds like a daunting task. You know, where do we start? And wow, the problem is so big. But as somebody, and I'll get into this in our next segment, just to give you a little background on me and the time I spent as a homeless person and some of the things that I did while I was there, some of the things that I did on my journey to get back on my feet, and where the fire and the passion got ignited deep within me to give back and really immerse myself at looking back to help others who are searching on the path that I was in to get back on your feet. I mean, you know, homelessness, I can honestly say that I learned a lot of valuable life lessons that only life can teach you when you're homeless. And just letting people know sometimes, you know, when you're in that free fall, just how the smallest thing sometimes that we people, when I say we, people who are not necessarily faced with homelessness and they know where their next meal's coming from and they got the roof over their head. Some things just not that we're bad people. We just can they're easy to overlook. So sit back, and we really hope that you enjoy this show. I'm really excited about our interview today with Joe Morris, who's a super great guy who really cares. And when I get back in my next segment, I'll say something. I'll share something with you that it's kind of like I'm real big on motivational quotes, but whenever I think of attorney Joe Morris and our relationship, I always think of this motivational quote. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this break. So welcome back. As the kids say, and we call them kids or the young adults, we want to keep it real in terms of what we're doing here at BowtieLife.net and our topics, our guests, and just how we lay these things out for our listeners to digest, understand, and share thoughts with them. Having said that, I've always used myself I think you have to put yourself out there to let people understand that in a society where everybody has an opinion and they're talking about different things, which is fine, and I don't have a problem with that because I love people. But it's a different thing when you are talking about something that you're either A, very interested and enthusiastic about, or B, something that you've actually experienced and been through. So homelessness, for those who don't know me, I'm going to put myself out there that I was actually in the ranks of the homeless after a divorce. And I found myself in the ranks of the homeless for almost 4 years. And we're not talking about couch surfing here. We're talking about on the street, not knowing where the next meal is coming from, homeless. Now, for many years, or the reason that I want to put that out there as a foundation for what I'm about to share is, for many years, although I made it back on my feet, for many years it was something that, quite frankly, I was afraid of sharing with people because, you know, again, I mean, who wants to say they went belly up in life and were homeless? You know, I put up this mental block that, hey, I made it back, and if I never talk about it, nobody has to know. And that's just a period in my life that I've overcome. But, you know, as I got on my feet and kind of got into the, for me, I was in the automotive field as a salesman. And that was kind of like my transition point from being homeless. Because, you know, if you could sell, you know, they'll put you out there on the blacktop. If you can sell, you can sell. You know, it's almost like baseball. If you can hit the ball, you know, there's a team out there that's going to get you the plate appearances. So, you know, the car business was very good to me. But as I got into that business, transitioning out of being homeless, you know, I found myself. And, you know, selling cars, you come in contact with a lot of different people. And you look at a lot of people's credit, you know, when they're buying cars, that's something you have to do. And when you look at somebody's credit, you see them, you see their mistakes, their successes, failures, you know, where they're late, you know, are they in bankruptcy and don't even know it? And I can remember I did extremely well in the car business, according to my standards or what I felt. You know, somebody might look at what I did in the car business and say, that's nothing. Somebody might look at it and say, wow, I sleep well at night feeling that I gave it my all. It was rewarding for me, and I feel I did well. You know, I had my attitude changed. You know, I'd made it. You know, I'm making money now. I'm willing, I'm dealing, you know, I'm in an environment that's like the Wolf of Wall Street. I mean, you know, we're throwing money around and money's not an object and we're making lots of money, we're spending lots of money, a lot of bravado. And I can remember a person came in and I saw myself in that person, and they came in, you know, hat in hand, really needed a car. You know, you got a family, you need a car, you're down. And it takes a lot of courage to come into a car dealership knowing that, you know, your finances aren't really where they should be. But it's almost like a Hail Mary last ditch effort. Maybe somebody can help you kind of attitude. So the guy came in and he wasn't even my customer. I can remember it was an afternoon and, you know, a bunch of us were up at the sales tower and, you know, they got a credit bureau and we all happened to be standing around and we pulled the guy's credit. And there was an industry term, jargon, if you will, that the car salesman used amongst themselves. If somebody had a if somebody had bad credit, we would call them a bogue, short for bogus. And if it was really bad, we call them a roach. And every time, it just goes to show you how you can desensitize yourself to certain things. But so this person, you know, they pulled the credit. We looked at the credit. And, you know, we all kind of were, you know, had our little inside jokes about it. And I remember the manager saying, hey, man, you know, that's a roach. You know, tell him to get off the lot. And the gentleman was walking through the front door and our eyes met. And at that moment, I saw Jay Austin in that man. You know, I knew what that looked like. And I would have never have known what that looked like had I not been homeless. And that was a moment of truth for me. That was a moment of conviction for me. And that was the moment that I realized that out of all of the things that I had experienced as a homeless person that I didn't like, because people will kick you when you're down and you can't fight back. Everything that I didn't like and everything that I remembered, I was doing that now. And, you know, that moment convicted me. And then I realized the importance of it's no longer good enough to say that I was homeless. It's no longer good enough to say that, hey, I made it back on my feet and I've got my roof covered and I'm eating well and I'm dressed sharp. That is no longer the goal line. The goal line got moved farther than that. How can I use this experience and my gift of sales and connecting people? How can I use my gift to make an impact to help the homeless? That became my new goalpost. And it was that moment that the spark, you hear about the Big Bang, you say, well, you know, what happened before the Big Bang? Or what was it like if I was standing there? That was my Big Bang. That was my moment of clarity when a fire was lit in my heart and I became passionate. And even though a lot of times it's long odds asking people to donate, it's long odds to get people passionate about helping other people. But, you know, I told myself, I said, you know what? It's long odds to be homeless and get back on your feet as well. So, you know, that's a story that I just kind of wanted to put out there to really set the foundation for, you know, why I'm passionate. You know, why can I speak about this topic with such authority? Because I've been there. I've been there as somebody who's homeless. I've been there as somebody who made it back, and I've been there as somebody who worked their way up to being a board member, and the actual challenges and different things that a lot of times the public does not see when it comes to that nonprofit space in terms of being homeless. And and just so I can be true to my word, I wanted to finish this segment up by sharing a little motivational quote, and I love motivational quotes, about about our guest and our relationship. That always comes to mind when I think about how our relationship has grown over the years. I once read a quote that said, you know, and I'm probably going to chop this up, but I hope I can convey the message. A guy was complaining that he had no shoes until he met the man who had no feet. And then that put it into perspective. It's a bad thing when you don't have shoes. I mean, it hurts. You're out here walking barefooted. But think about the person that's out here on the same path, same journey, has to do everything you have to do, and they have no feet. So it put it in perspective. Attorney Joe Morris is just somebody that, you know, similar to me. You know, I met him. He's actually one of our clients, really humble guy. When I got to know his story and, you know, over time, and he opened up to me and shared his story, his life story, his humble beginnings, you know, a lot of the stuff that I went through, that I was kind of thumping my chest that I'd made it. And, when he opened up to me, I was just like, wow, OK. So That's just a little teaser, and when we get him on, we'll let him tell his own story. So we'll be back after this segment to just tell you a little bit about the Community Concerns, Inc., just a few things, what they're about, and some interesting things that I looked at on their website. So stay tuned. Well, welcome back to our next segment. We hope that we haven't bored you. Well, I hope I haven't bored you to this point. I feel really good about some of the things that I shared with our listeners thus far. You know, homelessness is something that, again, I'm just anybody who knows me understands that I'm really passionate about, and I'm just crazy enough to think that, you know, I can change the world. So in this segment, I just want to talk a little bit or transition into some things that I feel are important to people when it comes to either volunteering to volunteering your time with a homeless organization. And then also, I just want to talk about some of the things that people get wrong, and then I personally don't hear enough about it, but again, this is an experience share. Some of the things that if you're thinking about getting involved with the homeless organization, some of the things that you will face that you didn't know going in, and nobody told me. And, you know, I think that it's important to, I guess my motto is to live, learn, and then pass that experience on. Because the one true way, I believe, to really prove that you have a grasp of something or that you understand something and you're ready to move on to bigger and better things in life or the next lesson is to take that information you learn and give it away. And, you know, that's the one sure way to know that, hey, you understand it, you got it, and then you can go on to other things. So let's just talk about volunteering with the homeless organization. I can remember, like I said in my last segment, when I decided that, hey, you know, I was gonna make a difference. And what I decided to do, I can remember I was always volunteering to serve food on Thanksgiving. And I can remember, you know, my wife and I would get up on Thanksgiving morning, and, you know, we would be down to serve food to the homeless. You know, in order to get there to start serving at 6, you know, we'd get up at 4:30, and we were enthused, and we were like, yeah, let's go. And we'd get there, and we would serve, and the organization that was serving the food each year got progressively bigger, which you would think like, wow, you know, this is a good thing. You know, you're growing, you've done the grassroots, you've connected with the community, and you're growing, and you know, more and more people are coming. Needless to say that it got so big that the third or fourth year that we would go and serve, you know, they start bringing in prominent churches, which, you know, again, I don't have a knock up against any church or whatever, but this was a center to what I'm sharing now. They bought in this bigger church, and then, you know, they wanted to exclusively use their members, and then anybody else who had been there year over year, it was like, if you didn't register, you can't volunteer. And then it got so big that they actually started turning away volunteers. And that was the final straw for me. I was just like, you know, as somebody who has been homeless, I can remember, I'm like, I don't care if I had a million people coming out for a volunteer organization. I would never turn away a volunteer because it costs you nothing. Whatever they had in their heart to come and give their time, and, you know, if it's nothing else, that they got a chance to say they volunteered and then took your message back out into the community. But that's a point that, you know, I definitely think gets overlooked. And I think if you're looking for an organization, and there's a lot of good ones out there, understand that You know, we're helping people. Don't never lose sight of that. And kind of, you know, see how they're doing things. You know, sometimes people pull at your heartstrings, and it, to me, I say it's like a car. You know, the car looks pretty. You look under the hood, and it's the engine's not working. So you always want to be aware of that. And I wanted to share a quick story. I can remember the same thing. I was volunteering at this Feed the Homeless deal. And I can remember we got down there, my wife and I got down there early, and the line had started forming for volunteers. And, you know, you meet people. So this particular gentleman was, you know, he ended up standing with us in line, and then, you know, they opened the gates, and then we ended up getting assigned to the same task. And my wife and I always make it a habit to, you know, we'll take a bunch of clothes that we want to donate, and we'll take those with us. And that'll, you know, that we would do that, but we leave them in the car. So we figured we turn the donations in after we get through with our shift. So I can remember I end up, as fate would have it, I end up working side by side with this guy all day. I mean, killer work ethic. I mean, the guy was running. I mean, everything he did is spotless. He had a kind spirit. He worked hard. And I can remember I said, well, you know, we had these big hefty sacks of clothes out in the car. And I can remember my wife, her back was hurting or something. And I asked him, I said, hey, I said, can you come out to my car with me and help me carry these clothes in? And he was like, sure. And we got to the car. And I opened the trunk and we got the bags out. And he said, do you mind, you know, can I look through these first? And I can remember, and the guy was dressed, you know, golf shirt, clean, whole nine yards. And I was just like, yeah. And he told me, he said, hey, I'm homeless. And he shared his story and said, well, you know, something happened to my wife. She got sick. And he had his pride where he was just like, you know, I know I'm homeless, but I want to work for my food. And, you know, he wanted to keep his head up. And, you know, he told me, and again, this was another mountaintop experience, if you will. He told me, thank you. And I said, well, thank you. What are you thanking me for? And he said, thank you for talking to me and not at me. And, you know, I remember when I was homeless, one of the reasons some people are reluctant to talk about being homeless is because, you know, sometimes when people know that you're homeless, they do talk at you and not to you. And every time to this day when somebody says, you know, it's just customary. You go in a place, hey, how you doing? How was your day? You know, that's something people don't generally ask a homeless person. You know, how was your day? Because what they're thinking is, hey, I'm not going to say nothing. This person might want something from me. Da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, that's another point that I want to put out there in this podcast is, you know, never underestimate just the gift of your fellowship with somebody who they don't want to talk about themselves being homeless. They don't want anything from you. They just want to, you know, hey, you know, be talked to and not at. And, you know, that was something that, again, I think a lot of people just overlook. And I don't think they do it with malice in their heart. But it's like my mom, rest her soul, used to always say, you know, it's one thing to do something and not know you're doing wrong. It's another thing to be told and then you do it anyway. So now that's on your plate. So make sure when you see somebody, you never know their situation, talk to them and not at them. You know, they're still people. So that's another thing to consider when looking at homeless organizations that you want to volunteer. Now I kind of want to transition a little bit to just being a board member. I don't want to go through my whole journey in the interest of time, because we want to leave time for this great interview that's coming up next. But you know, I can remember, and this happens, I think, in life it happens as well. I can remember I was so passionate. I found my home. When I say my home, I found my homeless organization that resonated with me. I knew I met the executive director, got really immersed in this organization, the Nicholas House, and great organization. And I can remember one day they tapped me on the shoulder and they were like, "Jay, you know, you're passionate. You talk about us. You're just relentless. Why don't you join our board?" And I still think that was a moment in my life that I really felt good as somebody who has come full circle in life, who had been homeless, who got back on their feet, who got married. I've been married now 18 years. I've been with my wife for 19 years. I couldn't be happier just kind of looking back at the milestones that I hit in my life, and being asked to be on the board of the Nicholas House is definitely up there as in my book as an achievement. And, you know, then it changes. When I say it changes, you're not out there just feeding people. And now you're sitting down, you're looking at numbers. You're looking at actual facts and figures. And the numbers have to be audited and accounted for. And grants have to be written. And you have to understand how the government is giving these grants and what the stipulations are. Yeah, the operational expenses for people who are actually in the house, pipes break, organizing different volunteer organizations that want to come out and cut the grass and feed people. There's a lot going on that you just don't really see from the front when you're just saying, "Hey, I want to volunteer." So being on the board, there are challenges. There are challenges in, you know, we'll get into it with our next guest to have him shed light on it as a current board member of Community Concerns, Inc., which is a holistic approach to end homelessness. We'll let him get into that more deeper. But I will tell you this. There comes a point in everyone's life who is on a board, and you just feel like, you know what, I'm not moving the needle anymore. It takes an act of Congress to get anything done. I've got an idea. It's got to be voted on. You need a quorum. Some people don't show up, and you know the Q word comes up, and the Q word is quit. There's always this human nature to feel like, you know what, I can go over to this other organization and things are probably better over there. And so I might quit here and go over there, or, you know, just give up. Well, let me tell you something. Don't. One of the best pieces of advice that I got was from a board member from Hillside, which is a nonprofit that deals with children with personality disorders. Been in Atlanta a long time, and I'm sure we'll have him on as a guest in one of our future episodes. But, you know, I was really frustrated over some coffee, and I was just kind of venting, and he told me, he described the same things that go on his board, and, you know, he said, "Jay, it's the same way everywhere." And again, that was a moment of truth for me, because I kind of went back in my mind to being homeless, and I was just, you know, I had to just say, like, "Hey, you know what? It's not easy. You know, it's not easy being homeless. I mean, think about the choices and decisions and intestinal fortitude that you had to display every day to get back on your feet. Now, Jay, talking to myself, you have, this is a hurdle. You know, it's not going to be easy. You didn't quit then. Why would you quit now?" So, like the proverbial tick, I dug in. I dug in. You know, I asked more questions. I was there. You know, if we didn't make quorum, you know what? We didn't make quorum, but it wasn't because I wasn't there. When you know, it came time to fundraise, you know, I always had an idea. You know, I'd make that phone call. I was there on the third Saturday of each month, giving that open door tour, being part of that, yeah, regardless. And that was also a valuable lesson that I'd like to share. You know, if you're thinking about getting involved at the board level, hey, roll your sleeves up, dig in. You know, it's not going to be easy. And if it was easy, one of my mentors used to tell me, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. So Just keep that in mind. And again, we'll let Attorney Joe Morris really talk about that. He has served for 5 years on the Board of Community Concerns. And you know, I and we've talked, you know, over a cigar. You know, it's not always easy. So you know, that wraps up this segment. When we come back, I'm just gonna set the table to let you know a little background about our guest, and I'm really excited. And then we'll have him on the show. So stay tuned. Okay.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing perfect. Just for our audience, this is take two. I think we had a little technical difficulty. Glad you got a chance to get through. How you doing?
Man, I'm doing great. What about yourself?
Awesome. Well, we're going to jump right in. I recorded a few segments kind of teeing it up about who you are. And a little bit about the nonprofit. So, Joe, I didn't want to spoil our listeners. Well, let me take that back. Didn't want to steal your thunder. And I told our listeners that you are a very, very humble guy. But can you just give us a paragraph and just kind of tell us a little bit about your story, where you came from?
Well, I was born and raised in Macon, Georgia. By mom and grandma, probably not unlike a lot of people similarly situated. And community, man, we survived by community. I remember, you know, Jay, I don't know about yourself, but I grew up in the sort of borrow sugar and eggs and stuff from your neighbor era.
Right.
Where communities took care of each other. Unlike today. So, you know, that's kind of, and you sort of think about that era, and that's, you know, kind of what helped develop me. And I'm a first generation, college graduate. So of course, same for law school. So that was a big, plus, not just to myself, but family as well. Because, you know, when you grow up in a community, you're sort of looking to wherever you land, you're sort of looking to add value, you know, to the new community that you reside in, you know, as well as still, believe it or not, taking care of the community where you came from.
Sure.
You know, not just financial resources, but a lot of legal advice, a lot of mentoring, et cetera. So, you know, that's kind of you know, my backstory.
Okay.
And like everybody, you know, that's a general backstory. There are a lot of specifics.
Oh, sure. Yeah. We can talk all day. I just wanted to lay the foundation. And what I told our listeners before you came on, I said, you know, Joe, and correct me if I'm wrong, I said, Joe is a matter of fact kind of guy. And he's the kind of guy that'll hit you in the face with a rubber brick to get your attention. But when you speak generally, you know, I always walk away, which is the reason that I'm excited to have you on as a guest. I always walk away every conversation that we've had just a little bit wiser. Another way to look at some things that I just find it fascinating that you're able to connect with me on that level. And I just kind of wanted to put that in front of our listeners, because our topic today is something that's kind of near and dear to both of us. I feel confident in saying so. Again, thank you for giving us that little backstory. Now, Joe, I kind of wanted to kind of transition into, because I talked about everything around it and I shared my experiences about being homeless and why I was excited about it. But can you tell us a little bit about the nonprofit that you're on? The board of, and just kind of give us a summary of, you know, what they are, when they started, and what their mission is.
Yeah, Community Concerns is an organization founded by Reverend James Milner, 30 years ago this year. And he was looking to make an impact in the community around him and his church, hence the name Community Concerns. And he noticed the issue with homeless, not just men and women, but children. And so he started this organization to help with that endeavor. And Community Concerns is sort of a, and if you check out the website, it's sort of a holistic approach to end homelessness. So it's not just about putting people in houses, but addressing some of the other needs as well. The support services that come along with that. You know, you've got hunger issues. If people didn't have a place to live, they probably don't have a place to eat. A lot of them have mental health deficiencies. And Community Concerns attempts to package this and address, you know, various needs, supplemental needs that come along with the issue of homelessness as well.
Okay. Okay. Now, we talked briefly on as a sidebar, but Joe, can you tell us a little bit about, and this is more of a perspective thing, about the diet or hunger and the mental health issues that kind of feed into the homelessness, and in my opinion, correct me if I'm wrong, kind of get misdiagnosed. It's easy just to kind of get a big brush and just say, oh, it's homelessness, you know, work harder and you wouldn't be there.
Yeah, but you and I both know that's sort of the, you know, get wrapped up in this, you know, the whole American dream. I call it a saga because it's ongoing, you know, it never ends. But yeah, man, could you imagine that somebody gets up and make the decision to live without shelter?
Wow.
So starting at that, on that premise, you know that there may be something else that is just not connecting. Yeah, there may be some people who just had a string of bad luck, lost a job. But in a majority of the cases that we found out, and keep in mind, Jay, and I'm going to answer some more questions that you might have. The Gateway came online when I was working for Mayor Shirley Franklin.
Okay.
And during our administration, we had people who literally went and slept on the streets so they could count homeless people. I mean, that's what we were doing. We were literally attempting to understand, you know, the vast amount of people that were living on the streets of Atlanta. And one of the commonalities of all these people was some mental deficiency. And so even when we went to house them, we realized that some people didn't want housing because they had been accustomed to living on the streets for so long, is that their mind, they felt more comfortable living on the streets than they do living, you know, in adequate shelter. And, you know, I own a house. There are a lot of other responsibilities that come with owning, living, and maintaining that space as well.
Absolutely.
That if a person has a mental deficiency, they're not going to be able to do that.
Right. And that's a great point. And, you know, I kind of want to drill down a little more on that, because I know I personally talked about to our listeners before you came on some of the challenges of, you know, seeing homeless from, okay, yeah, I got up, I volunteered, I went down and I fed the homeless. But some of the challenges on the from the board member's perspective on, the fundraising, making sure the money's going where it's supposed to go, getting people to the right services. Can you talk a little bit about some of the challenges as a board member? And maybe if I could phrase it, shed some light on your experiences from the other side addressing those challenges from a board member's perspective?
Well, there's always, I think, unless you have, you know, wealthy individual corporate donors, you know, cutting you substantial checks every year. I mean, there's always, there'll always be, you know, this burning desire to raise more money. And from our perspective, we were, seemed to be dependent on governmental agencies, you know, to assist in providing the resources to address some of these needs that we address. The social services, the apartments, you know, upkeep, all of those things require money. And what we found when looking back was that during the financial crisis, you know, governments were losing money. So governments didn't have the monies to adequately, and, you know, in governments, you have to have balanced budgets.
Absolutely.
So what happens with governments is you start cutting programs, services, people in order to present that balanced budget. And, you know, city of Atlanta during that time was no different. Fort County was no different. So all of governmental agencies around us were feeling that financial pinch as well. And it trickled down to the nonprofits that were heavily dependent on those resources. So as a result, what we're finding is that we're struggling to meet, you know, these basic daily needs. You got staff. And it would be great if everybody in the world woke up today and said, hey, I'm going to go volunteer some hours to all these various nonprofits that are out there. But just doesn't happen that way. So we are, you know, you get into a situation where you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. and we're no different. So we have begun to, you know, rethink our fundraising strategies, and we have to resort to acting almost like for-profit companies.
Wow.
In order to, you know, raise this money. So you have to have events that literally attract people to come to your nonprofit event, you know, and people nowadays want tangible stuff.
Mm.
You know, something that you can provide. So they're just not walking away empty handed. They have something tangible that they can say that they obtain or report back to suggest that these dollars that were donated were well spent.
Right. Now, Joe, again, I'm going to continue a little bit more down that path, if you will. Because again, we talked on a sidebar offline, and it kind of intrigued me. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about the shifts? About the shifts now to where, I guess, the whole model where it used to be, if a person was homeless, they could go knock on a shelter, and kind of like each shelter had their own thing. Where now, the grant dollars are kind of advocating go to a central place and then kind of get farmed out, if you will. Can you kind of tell us how that works?
Yeah, there's and I'll do my best to give a very generic sort of view of what's happening to the listeners. The government now is asking that. If homeless people show up at your organization, that they be sent to a centralized location. And in one respect, I think that can be good because they get to, I mean, you get to create a list of people who you have touched. And from there, you know, case management kicks in, and then they are referred out to the various organizations who deal with homelessness, who have beds or whatnot to to supply. And this is for people who are leaning on these government dollars. Now, if you've got strictly private dollars, then you're not, you don't necessarily have to participate in this program. But if you're getting the government dollars, it's almost, I think it's mandatory that you participate in this program. And so what it does, though, it takes a lot of the control. And keep in mind, Jay, that people who, like Reverend Milner, who started this nonprofit, didn't start it for profit. It's a nonprofit. He started because he wanted to better the community. So having somebody in need come to your nonprofit and say, hey, I've got my family, we need help, and then you have to turn around and send them to a centralized location can be problematic. A, because it does not address their immediate need, which is shelter. And B, it you know, you when you send them to, it runs the risk that something is going to get lost in that translation, because you got to send them there, then they've got to do intake, and then they've got to send them out. Now, government does a lot of stuff well, but it doesn't do everything well.
Right.
And you know, I think, and some of our board members think, that there are better ways to address that concern. Probably even reporting up as opposed to going to one place and sending out. But that's just kind of how government is sort of moving. That's how the policy shift is happening, where you kind of send everybody to one centralized location, and then you've got to depend on them actually staying in the process. Because you know, sometimes long lines discourage people from standing, you know, to get the resources that they need. And most of the organizations out there, like Community Concerns, Nicholas House, they want to help people.
Right.
You know, so when somebody comes up, you know, it's almost as if somebody walks up to me on the street, and you and I have created some centralized, and be like, hey, you got to walk. You got to go 10 miles to this other place, put your name on this list, and then maybe they'll send you back out to us, and I'll give you this $10.
Right.
And it it's almost as if it's creating a barrier to entry. And a barrier to entry to people who probably doesn't have the best social skills. You know, probably doesn't have transportation to get from one location to the other. And that's why a bunch of different homeless organizations exist. They're spread out so they can kind of meet people where they're located. And not have to, you know, the organization doesn't have to be mobile, meaning it doesn't have to come follow you around.
Right.
If you're in a location, you go straight to it. And so we think that it's probably going to create a barrier to entry and create more issues than it resolve.
Well, now, Joe, I kind of want to pivot to another area that the public really doesn't see, but I still identify it as a challenge because, like I told our listeners earlier, I've actually sat on the board of the Nicholas House for 4 years. But Joe, you know, now that I'm approaching 50, you know, and people that age can relate to the fact that, you know, that stubborn belly fat that just doesn't go away.
Yeah.
You know, can you kind of shed some light on maybe if somebody's out there, you know, they're passionate about a cause and they want to serve on the board. And I told my listeners earlier, I was just like, you know, there's going to come a point where you're going to reach that plateau. Like, am I making a difference? Should I quit? Should I move on? Can you just share, with our listeners, some of the challenges or things as a board member that are frustrating? You may have even wanted to quit, but you're still there and you muscled through it. What are some of those things from your perspective?
Well, first off, Jay, let's just say I'm American. And by that, I mean, I love instant gratification, instant success. You know, so everything that we've been conditioned to do we want results then and there. Not so much with some of the social issues that kind of plague society, and homelessness, sitting on the homelessness board is no different. And it's frustrating, not so much. I think we do great work. But if you look into the future, and I have had this conversation with the executive director, founder, and some other members of the board, is that if we don't figure out how to become good at fundraising, we're going to run at some point in time, we're going to run out of money. We're going to have to cut services, which we believe are vital to, you know, that population we serve. But, you know, sitting on any board or in any group has its challenges, different personalities. You know, you in ours, we've got a founder who 30 years ago, I was 16. So this organization, you know, was founded before I even knew homelessness was an issue. And think of how much the world has changed since, you know, since we were in high school, Jay.
Right.
I mean, we got self-driving cars now.
Right.
So the technology has, you know, I believe the technology is going to create a whole new generation of homeless people, because most of the jobs are going to be geared towards people who have that level of understanding. And I don't know if the workforce is going to be able to keep up with that demand. But yeah, it's frustrating from the standpoint that I think we can do some great work if we are able to get the resources. But that comes, you know, you've got to work with your board and convince your board that we've got to not be more aggressive, because I think our founder, he's great at asking. But I think we've just got to sit back and revisit our strategies on how to go about competing for these very limited dollars. And that's where most of, you know, my frustration comes in. It's just sort of battling wits. Because people are used to doing it a different way, which is okay. It's worked for 30 years.
Sure.
And worked successfully for probably 20 to 25 of those 30 years. But just being proactive, I think we've got to start using different fundraising models. You know, hiring a fundraiser in and of itself is problematic, because you're paying somebody with dollars that you could be used for programming.
Right.
So that's sort of the catch 22 with that. But you know, in the near future, it may be necessary.
Oh, sure. Sure.
You know, so
it's true. It's true.
So but just from, you know, you kind of, when you're working on a homelessness board, you kind of know what you're getting into. A large part of it is just making sure people kind of keep in mind the end goal, and that's the service people who have no places to stay, families with no places to stay, and you know, addressing those, what I mentioned earlier, those supplemental needs that come along with the issue of homelessness.
Well, then Joe, you know, pivoted on to another point. You know, we had talked earlier, and I kind of wanted to drill down for our listeners as well. Let's talk a little bit about that private-public partnership. I know you've been in that space. You've actually worked with city government. I know that you have been a lobbyist or are a lobbyist as well. What is the health of that relationship? Is it better? Is it the same? Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's so many. I think most nonprofits are going to have some private partnerships out there, be it individual members like me who serve on the board, who work for the corporations. And most corporations have components of themselves that do nothing but spend their money on nonprofit services or to support government services. But it's hard to, you know, to talk about, you know, you've got billion-dollar companies. Of course, they're going to be doing, you know, some, you know, donating to some nonprofit causes. But I think it's more than just writing a check. I mean, it's becoming more of a partner, a true partner, wherein your organization is writing a check, but it's probably getting just as much money in man woman hours, if that makes sense, Jay.
Okay.
That's where people from the corporation are on the board, you know, giving their brain power, lending their brain power to solving some of these complex problems, just like they would in the business world. And sharing, you know, non financial resources.
Such, you know, as? Can you tell us?
They all have programming assistance. You know, for instance, you know, we have a bunch of community partners. You go to website, you'll see it, Delta, State Farm. I mean, they have IT specialists that could be helpful to some of the programming needs that these nonprofits have. And that's a huge cost savings. Mm-hmm. Real dollars that could be used for, you know, program services. And that's just one example. You know, most of them have people who have. Abilities. And that too can be very valuable, especially during times like now where you're pivoting from the way you used to do business to the way you should be doing business now.
Good point.
And you cannot put a dollar value on those services. And I think that's where companies need to be sort of shifting their focus. It's not just writing a check, but it's doing those, you know, it's becoming a true partner with the organization to kind of reach, help the organization that you're writing your check to reach the goals that, you know, are attainable if you got everybody sort of rowing in the same direction.
Right. And Joe, I can, you know, talking from my own experience, and when you said that, it just kind of jogged my memory. I can remember, and, you know, most people know, I'm a small business owner, been in business 9 years. I have been homeless myself. I'm really passionate about the issue. And I can remember, somebody telling me, the executive director, saying it's three ways that you can help: your time, talent, and your treasure. And for some people, it is convenient for them to stroke that big check because, like you said, you know, it takes money to make all this happen. And I can remember there was a time where I didn't have a lot of money to stroke that check, but I had a lot of time and I was passionate and I would get out there. And it was almost like the old business model was so geared towards rewarding people who got out there and stroked that check, but the infantry work of the people who were knocking on doors and getting their friends and get them in there was almost like, that's fine, but we want to reward you. We want to reward people who stroke checks. Have you noticed that across the whole nonprofit space, or should there be more of a emphasis on, hey, you know, if you're out there giving your time,
yeah.
You know, can you
share? Jay, I don't see, once again, I don't know if that's just a just in that industry. I just think that's the American way. I mean, you think about it. I mean, people with money get access to everything. I mean, somebody, you know, all these strangers walking around, somebody pull up in a limousine, get out and knock on my door, chances are he probably be in my house in a few minutes. Let a guy shabbily dressed come up to my door and knock on it.
Right.
He might have a police pull up. You see what I'm saying? So
who is that guy?
I don't know if that's a, if that's, if that attitude is just operates in the nonprofit space or in, you know, I think that's just the American way, man. And it's, I mean, as sad as it is, I think that's a societal problem at large and not segmented.
Good push on that. Well, Joe, I know, you know, I know that you are an attorney by trade or profession. Tell us a little bit about how that expertise or training has helped you as you navigate the nonprofit space or the business space, but in particular the nonprofit space.
Yeah, law is inherent in everything. Those policy changes I was talking about is just laws. Just you know, some people, the rules and regs that you know, it's such a hard issue to corral. You know, when you and I talked earlier, it's probably a problem that will never be solved.
Right.
Especially in countries where you have huge gaps between, you know, wealthy and poor. But I think you have to have things in place to keep it from becoming epidemic. And I think that's probably where we need to, the space we need to play in. While you've always gotten an eye set on eradicating homelessness and bringing an end to it, you got to be realistic and understand that there's only so much you can do. And I think organizations are beginning to understand that I may not be able to do everything in homelessness, but maybe I can just have a service that provides food every day. And to answer your question, Jay, you know, law just kind of teaches you how to think about the law.
Mm.
You know, while you're learning specifics, it also teaches you how to address problems from different perspectives. And you know, I think that robust method of learning is sort of what helps, you know, navigate through this, you know, this nonprofit space is, hey, you know, why can't we do this way as opposed to the way we've been doing it? You know, even if we've sustained some measurable amount of success, you know, think of encyclopedias. You know, nobody sitting around in encyclopedia company saw the internet,
right,
you know, being, you know, detrimental to what they were doing. And now you would be hard pressed. I mean, you would have to search far and wide. I think my mom may still have some from when we were growing up, but you'd be hard pressed to find an encyclopedia, man.
Right.
So, that's what I think the new challenge is for people who are sitting on these nonprofit boards is just trying to approach the issue differently because like we said earlier, funding is drying up. I mean, think of how expensive you could to own property is in the city of Atlanta that you're using for nonprofit services.
Good point.
So, you know, so A, where are you going to put these places now? And I think those are issues that you're going to have to get a bunch of people in the room who are practical, who are listening to people who have the issues. I mean, it's always easy for people who've never been homeless, never worked with homeless, never knows anybody homeless to give their opinion on what should happen with homeless people.
Right.
But during your intake, when you're acquiring all of this information from homeless people, they're probably going to give you tidbits of information that kind of help you understand the homelessness space as a whole. And I think you've got to have smart people. And by smart, I mean people doing the work, right. not no gifted person who just, because I don't believe in that.
Right.
You know, I think there are people who work hard and people who don't. And that's where you get smart and not smart from.
Well, Joe, can I jump in on that?
Sure.
Because what you said something, and you know, again, I know it's a tough issue to deal with, but everybody, when I say a tough issue to deal with homelessness as a whole, but you know, share a success story, something that's just you can look back and say, hey, like you said earlier, I made a difference. This is a success.
Oh man, Jay, I mean, this for me, it's always, you know, I don't know if it's ever my success story. I'm just a small part of this organization. That's, you know, I've been on the board since 2014. The organization's been around for 30 years.
Okay. Okay.
So I wouldn't dare claim any of this as my success. But we continue to, you know, we've got apartments, we've got emergency housing, man. And right now, we've got a waiting list. And I think that in and of itself is a success story, because that means all of those beds are full.
Right.
And on any given night, you know, we're making sure that people, children are being fed, not going to bed hungry, and they're going to bed, you know, not sleeping under the bridge, but actually going to bed. And I think that's a huge accomplishment of Pastor James Milner and sort of his vision of what he wanted this to be. And I'm thankful, man, that they just let me be a small part of it.
Well, Joe, I know another thing, I used to give tours. I was part of the Open Door tour team that would actually give tours of the Nicholas House. And I can remember we'd always start the tour when we gathered the people together, and we would just ask, you know, what's the picture of homeless to you? What's the average person look like? And you said it earlier, and we kind of gloss right by it. But the people think it's the guy under the bridge when it's actually families.
Yeah.
You know that, you know, the fact that is to the public has one image. And the people on the ground who actually are working day to day know it's families. What would you do? And this is just a purely your opinion piece. But if it, you know, Joe Morris's world, what would you do to help shift that paradigm of, you know, who the actual population of the homeless is?
Jay, man, I know I've got all this legal education and training, but you ask some tough questions. Yeah, as a kid, you're pretty helpless. You know,
right?
You know, there's no, kids don't have these magic. You know, I often say, you know, kids are sort of at the peril of their parents. So if you're born into that situation, you know, unfortunately, you're going to be the face of that situation. And there's nothing you can do, you know, as a child. And so for I think people who do homelessness in general, if we could drill it down where we're just getting mental health patients, then that would make it a lot easier, right?
True.
Because now you're not worried about children. You're not worried about you know, women and children or families, you've just got a segment of the population. There's some mental illness. We know what it is. Now all we've got to do is treat the mental illness. And we've cured the disease caused homelessness. But, you know, once again, once you start factoring in economics, social economics, political social economics, you know, and then mental health, oh man, that, you know, I think, you know, you're going to get this sort of smorgasbord of what homeless looks like and continues to look like. And that's just sort of the reality of it.
Sure.
Yeah, it will be, I think it'll be painted with a broad brush, my friend, unfortunately.
Sure.
But that's why you and I are here. Sort of the price we pay to breathe, this somewhat fresh air.
Well said. Well said. Well, Joe, let me, we're kind of getting ready to wrap it up. So I just, I've got two more questions that I'd like to present to you. One being, how could someone get involved with your nonprofit?
Hey, man,
that you sit on the board of.
Yeah. Community Concerns. Let me give you guys the website is www.communityconcernsinc.com. We're located on Decatur Street, downtown Atlanta. We have contact information on the website as well. Phone number is 404-659-3390. And the specific address is 276 Decatur Street, Atlanta, Georgia, 30312. You can call or send an email to our executive director, James.Milner. Milner is spelled M-I-L-N-E-R at communityconcernsinc.com. And we always have training. We have ongoing, I think twice a month, we have training for new volunteers. We always have a call for talented board members who may want to join and can contribute that time, talent, and treasure that you spoke of earlier. So we need all hands on deck. It's just not a your problem, my problem, homeless person problems. At some point in time, it's going to become everybody's problem. To solve. So I suggest that people go ahead and start getting involved now.
Okay. Well, and to wrap it up, I know that you are, I think you've been in Atlanta long. I know you went to college here. What is it like? And because, again, you know, our government is something that affects everybody. But it's something that a lot of people know so little about the inner workings of. Tell us a little bit about the public policy part of it. I know you're involved in it, and I know the question is kind of hard to pose the question, but the public policy that... Oh,
sorry about that.
It's okay. I know the public policy part of it. It's something that a lot of people don't know a lot about. But can you just tell us a little bit about how the public policy and that you've been involved in actually affects? I know you said it's all of our problem. But what's it look like as the policy has been being written from your point of view?
Well, let's think about that for a second. It's called public policy for a reason. I mean, it's the policy set by the public. Who's the public? You and I. How are we setting it? Through the people we elect to the local, the various local governments, you know, in which we are situated. For me, it's the city of Atlanta. I live in DeKalb County, but do a lot of work in Fulton. So that's where it starts. And and the policy surrounding these nonprofit services with regards to where's the money going? Who is the money going to? What is the money being spent for? Is there any accountability for how those dollars are being spent? Those are all issues that affect the organization that I'm a part of, as well as the organization that you may have been part of and any other organization out there. So we want to make sure that we have people in place who are committed to ensuring that those dollars are going to be useful. I mean, it's not just enough to give an organization the money, but there has to be some accountability,
right,
to ensure that these dollars are actually helping people to address these deficiencies that they may have. Homelessness, the mental health side of it, food. I mean, think of Camp Best Friends, which is a program that the city of Atlanta runs. Without those dollars, some people who probably can't afford it will have to try and send their kids to, you know, camps that could cost as much as a couple of hundred bucks a week.
Right.
For the summer. So that policy is to the single parent or to the family where you've got two people working outside the home during the summer. That policy is a good policy for them because it addresses needs, hunger needs, safety needs, et cetera, during the summertime. So that's just an example of how the policy is being used to affect people's everyday lives. So you think of it in terms of what if that policy didn't exist?
Right.
Then what does that situation look like?
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
So I think that's where we have to, you know, kind of pay attention, Jay, to what, you know, our local politicians are doing. And a lot of it is trickled down. You know, the Camp Best Friends money, you know, comes from state dollars, which comes from federal dollars. So it is important that we not only just pay attention to local, that we're paying attention to who's representing us on federal levels as well. Because a lot of the money that we see and utilize on the local level has trickled down from the federal level via the state and other organizations.
True. True. Well, Joe, I'd like to thank you for being so gracious with your time. I have a lot of attorney friends, and I'm always very mindful not to ask too many questions because that's their bread and butter, so to speak. So I tread very lightly. So I'm thankful that you took time to shed some light on a topic that's very important to me. And then hopefully our listeners got a chance to maybe we said some things that they did not know that they're now aware of. And we hope that we can have you back on the show. In this particular podcast can be heard at bowtielife.net. And we hope we can have you back on in the future as we tackle different topics.
Thank you, Jay. Look forward to it, man. Thank you for doing this and keep up your good work as well.
All right. And as always, Joe, keep living the bow tie life.
Thank you, man.
All right. Take care.